Han, we've talked about love languages in terms of friendships, but is your love language, words of affirmation, the same in a romantic relationship?
So this is kind of surprising, but in a romantic relationship, my number one love language is physical touch, which I honestly just realized in this last year. I love the sense of closeness that I get from being with my partner in real life, the sense of comfort and safety that it gives me. But unfortunately, circumstances have led us to be in a long distance relationship for much of our time being in the relationship together. And it can sometimes be uncomfortable for me to admit this because it feels like there are already so many ways that we can stay connected with loved ones that I shouldn't take for granted. Like I'm able to receive gifts, acts of service, quality time, and words of affirmation through many of these avenues and give them to my loved ones. But physical touch has definitely been the one that's been missing, and that is a great introduction to today's guest, the founder of Tangible, a magical neck pillow that creates physical presence over distance. Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we showcase the abundant possibilities of who you can choose to be. I'm Pan.
And I'm Sophia. Our guest, Akshay, is also an avid violinist and product designer who has invented a dozen different prosthetic devices and consumer products. So impressive. His team created Tangible for those who know the pain of long distance, and I'm in that boat as well. And people who are craving the physical coziness and magical spontaneity of being in person with a special loved one in their life. And Tangible has gotten so much love from users already. People have shared that, you know, long distance makes me feel like our relationship is on pause, and Tangible is a way for me to press play again, which is such a sweet reaction to Tangible. Also very impressive is that they have over 11,000 couples on their waitlist slash beta community, and they sold out their first holiday batch of Tangible pillows, and I'm part of that first batch. I
Perfect. Oh
saw
my
that link go out,
God.
and I was like, I have to hop on this because I know it's gonna run out really quickly. So I'm excited to get my Tangible pillows. So I am super excited for this episode. If you can't tell, we've talked about physical distance with loved ones on, and we've talked about a lot of software innovation for staying connected, but building hardware is like way harder than building software anyways. And also, actually, you and I met 2 to 3 years ago through my friend Juliet. So Juliet and I worked on the HoloLens together, which is Microsoft's AR glasses. And we just had a great conversation about building hardware and immersive experiences. And it's just cool to have met you so many years ago and to see that you're still building Tangible, still iterating on it. And then thank you also, Akshay, for being the sweetest supporter of Bamboo and Glass. I know we reconnected at a wedding recently, and I was just really moved by how our stories have impacted you. So welcome, Akshay. Welcome to Bamboo and Glass, finally.
Thank you so much. What are the odds that you and I happen to be seated right next to each other at that wedding? It felt like absolute fate to me.
Yeah, that was so fun.
Because we're talking about long distance relationships, long distance connection, I want to ask all of us the same question, which is currently, whose physical presence do we miss the most that we want to experience right now? Akshay, since you're the guest, we'd love to hear from you first.
I'm actually really excited to see my girlfriend in a few days. I actually just did long distance for the past month. She was on a month-long trip to Spain, and it was actually a great longitudinal test for me to actually try and fully switch from using platforms like WhatsApp or FaceTime all the way to Tangible with my girlfriend and really put it to the ultimate test before we start shipping to customers.
You were the best beta tester that could possibly exist for Tangible.
You know, they say that the true designer is someone who can sort of design for any target audience. And that's actually how it ended up being for my journey. You know, I originally was not in a long distance relationship when I started on my journey with Tangible. And so it's actually kind of fun. You know, originally I had to put myself in other people's shoes to sort of design the best product for them, but somehow it's come full circle and now I get to enjoy and benefit from sort of my own design, which is always really fun.
That's amazing. I really miss my puppy, Coco. I'm gonna see her in a month. I also really miss my sister. She's so she, I mean, Tanya, you've met her. She just has this like spunky, lighthearted, warm energy, and I just wish I could be around her all the time. But I'll get to see her in a month Christmas.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I too miss my parents because they're over in Korea, so they're halfway across the world, and especially during the pandemic, it was much harder to go see them. And so it's been about a year and a half since I last saw them in Korea. And so I'm also getting to see them next month when I go there for the holidays. So I just know when I see them, it's going to be like this little group hug that we get to do together, which will be really, really tender and sweet. But let's get started to talk about just all the different, your origin story with Tangible and the experiences that motivated the creation of it. So for you, Akshay, what were some moments in your life when physical distance was the most frustrating? You kind of mentioned your girlfriend, you were in a long distance moment just the last month. Are there other moments similar to that?
Yeah, for sure. Really, it all comes down to my original founding story for Tangible. I went through a pretty harrowing experience of losing my mom to cancer at the start of COVID. And it was a more difficult type of cancer where it wasn't really a question of if she'd get better. It was more a question of how much time do we have? And so time felt really precious. And when we were in the middle of the COVID bubble, there was a period, the month right before my mom passed away, where she was actually hospitalized because of a nosebleed that wasn't stopping. And, you know, skipping all the sort of sadder details, what really was personally devastating for me was the new quarantine restrictions forcing all visitors, including even spouses of patients, to be kicked out of the hospital. And so during that month, I was forced to rely on video calls to try and feel present with my mom. And all I really wanted was to feel physically present by her side, not like I could snap my fingers and cure her cancer, make her symptoms go away. But somehow cancer is it's a terrible but beautiful thing that really emphasizes the importance of physically being there for loved ones, even when sort of hope is lost. And I was so sad that I didn't have that chance to be able to do that. And during that month, I became this extreme user of video calls where I was like, wow, like this glass screen separating me from my mom is actually making me feel farther away and sort of disempowered rather than closer. And, you know, that was the big catalyzing experience for me to try and work on what I thought was this like kind of leap forward for humankind sort of problem of how can we actually not just create connection over distance, but maybe create some kind of solution that can hit the next frontier of feeling present over distance. Mm-hmm. And it really is sort of a billion-dollar, very difficult, impossible sort of problem to bring to life, this modern-day manifestation of the idea of teleportation. But I just became so obsessed with that and have been working on it ever since.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. That sounds incredibly difficult. And you're right, like, in order to enjoy someone's presence over video call, they have to be able to hold their phone or have a tool to hold up their phone. You know, are trying to have a conversation, which might not be likely for, you know, either party. So that definitely sounds very limiting. What were some tools that you used aside from video calls to try to feel connected, or even some products that you felt inspired by?
Totally. You know, in the thick of the COVID era, when I was first dabbling in this opportunity space, I saw all sorts of horrific workaround solutions. I'd see Twitter posts of disposable gloves filled with warm water and placed in the hands of hospital patients to try and replicate the feeling of, you know, a warm human touch. Oh. I saw entire galleries of tripod stands with iPads that are designed to just like be propped up in front of a patient lying in bed to keep them company. And obviously, you know, the hospital situation is a very extreme and painful kind of distance separation. And I definitely witnessed and talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of other families going through similar pain. But it's a much larger issue outside of the hospital context. You might not believe this, but you know, at any given time, there's over 130 million long distance couples and military families around the world. And for a lot of those, you know, thankfully there are some solutions out there. But we think of these solutions as basically different variations of sort of like vibrating teddy bears over distance. You've got like touch bracelets that you can tap to send vibrations, you know, fun features of Apple Watches with digital touch. There's friendship lamps that let you match colors of your lamps across the world, and different kinds of internet-enabled jewelry that lets you sort of send flashing lights and other kinds of fun Morse code signals over distance. But as I said, none of that really comes to the same as being able to feel the coziness of sitting on the same sofa and sharing a warm blanket, or watching a movie while lying in the same bed, what can really get us closer to that level of immersive reality that feels really uplifting and wonderful and cozy.
Yeah, I think that is the perfect setup for you to tell us all about Tangible. So how does Tangible bring you that sense of closeness and coziness and presence over a distance?
Really, it comes down to a few different ingredients. First, what makes the feeling of being present with someone so magical? I sort of invented this silly little phrase that I call organic positive interruptions. The three of us right now are sort of in this virtual call doing this podcast. And this doesn't quite feel like real life because the only sense that we're sharing together is audio. If we were having a cozy chat and doing this interview in a physical recording studio or in a living room together, there'd be a lot of what I'd call organic positive interruptions that would actually add value to the moment. Maybe the doorbell would ring and a friend would like step into the door and there'd be like a gust of wind from outside that would like, you know, come and touch all of us as we're having this conversation. Perhaps we could smell a fresh batch of cookies in the oven. Or perhaps like one of us has a pet dog or cat that might just jump in our lap all of a sudden. We don't really control these environmental factors, but they sort of ebb and flow with the conversation and add energy to in-person moments. That's when we ask long-distance couples, like, what do you miss most about being in person? They nearly always say spontaneous interactions. And I think spontaneity often comes from the environment rather than sort of things we induce ourselves. That's why when we're stuck in a long-distance context and it's just endless FaceTime calls, we get tired of talking, because talking and talking is really the only entertainment or environmental stimuli we can sort of fake create rather than organically happen on its own. So that's the first part of it. And as part of the Tangible experience, which is a magical looking pillow that has a bunch of sensors and ways that it can let you feel warmth and vibration and different kinds of squeezing and compression sensations, it also pairs over Bluetooth with an app on your phone or tablet or really any smart device. And that provides other ways to feel these kinds of organic positive interruptions when you're in a video call that really help you convince your brain and through a series of sort of illusions and tricks that you're actually in the same room as your loved one. And that can be a really wonderful feeling.
I love that. And it's making you talking about this podcast space makes me think about how we're on this side of content creation or human connection in podcasting where we're really obsessed with like quality. Like, we actually would not want to have that gust of wind coming through because that would seem less quote unquote professional or something. But that is an interesting problem that we're faced with, because we're always thinking about like, how can we make so many elements of our podcasting experience feel like people are in the same room as us? And maybe it is those spontaneous interactions that we can have. And there are so many things that I can do with my hands here, but it just isn't always the same energy as if you can see my whole body or if you can actually feel my presence. And it makes me think about some of my favorite memories with my partner in the first year of dating is just sitting in the dorm room together, not saying a single word and just doing our homework. And something about that is just so precious. And that's something that's not necessarily valued as something to capture all the time. And so I love how Tangible can create another experience that doesn't require so much talking or so much eye contact all the time, so much attentiveness, because sometimes it's just like in the small things that can be taken for granted that you get to kind of share through a little touch and a nudge through the Tangible pillow. So that's really, really incredible.
Absolutely. I think that really hits the core of one of our favorite features of the Tangible experience, which is what we call Doodle, where you can actually take your finger and draw any shape on the screen, a smiley face, a heart, or simply just drag your finger around the screen, and your loved one will actually feel a smooth vibration travel like a massage throughout the pillow. And you can really differentiate up and down, left and right. And what I love most about this feature, as a huge unexpected side effect of the design of it, is that it actually eliminates awkward silence in video calls. Because for the first time, anytime there's like silence for a second, or you sort of finish telling your last interesting story of the day, but you don't want to hang up yet. You still want to sort of feel connected and spend a little bit more of that side-by-side studying time with your loved one, as you said, Han. Doodle lets you just fill that gap. And so many features like that in the Tangible experience, you know, sound a little bit silly when described. We have bubbles that spontaneously float across the screen, and if you pop them, you'll feel a pop and your loved one will also see the bubble disappear from their screen. And it's this kind of silly stuff that, you know, wouldn't sound great if you like put it on a website, but when you actually experience it, you can intuitively sort of imagine how this can actually take the distance out of long distance.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. It really feels like your loved one is reaching across this chasm of space and distance and like impacting you in the most like physical and like in-person way possible. That's so cool. I can't wait to like actually try that. I love hearing the origin story and how passionate you are about this space of fostering connection in these impossible circumstances of long distance. And I wanted to talk about some of the other things you've invented in the past. Like, for example, Staccato, the world's first music stand that sticks to any surface. Tan, this is so useful. Think about it.
I don't need to carry a music stand anymore. I don't have to assemble it, disassemble it. Yeah, it would have saved me so much time.
And like your posture too, incredible. You also have a book, which Tan, we should both get. It's called 50 Ideation Techniques to Spark Your Light Bulb, a book about creativity. That sounds like such a fun, like little, we can even do that live, you know, just brainstorm some fun ideas live on an episode together. You also invented Vibraflow, which is a modular, customizable, affordable, yet high-quality electric violin. So many of these like products and projects, and you obviously have so many skills and options for spending your time. So what is it about the problem that you're solving with Tangible that made you dedicate the last 2 years to it, when clearly you have so many other options for ways you can apply your passions and apply your skills?
I really appreciate that. I think what I'd say is that building a company is very different than building a product. And a lot of this stuff I've done before, inventing Staccato, writing a book, building fun electric violins, a lot of this stuff, those solutions, I do feel solved a meaningful problem, but they were not really solutions that were ever designed to scale beyond maybe just 50 or 100 sort of people in the world. And I think the moment you switch into the mindset of you're building a company, not a product, there is a much longer ramp up time to actually creating impact. A lot more resources are needed. It becomes clear that it's not just a me journey, but it's an us journey. And you become less of a designer of a product or an experience. You become more of a designer of an organization. And this is my first rodeo really doing that. I'm a first-time founder. And so it's been a lot of learning. And I knew that it would be a huge undertaking because I've been privileged enough to have other experiences interning for other amazing founders in the past when I was in college. And I know the amount of time and intention it takes to build a great company, not just, you know, a fun project that lives for just a summer or two. I really want to build something that had a chance of being what I like to call an artifact of culture. When you and I think back to our childhood, we think of certain products or experiences that really defined an entire decade or era of our lives. Our first Nintendo Wii, your parents' car, your Etch-a-Sketch, your favorite box of cereal. Mm-hmm. These are iconic things that like bring back so many memories or emotions that all emanate from a specific object or instance of experience in our life. And I think it's an amazing thing as a designer that I have this privilege where with whatever I create, if I sort of put enough intention into it with a team, this doesn't just have to be something that a lot of people buy off Amazon and like forget about a year later. It can be something that solves a meaningful enough problem, a salient enough pain point in your life in such a beautiful and articulate way that it's sort of worth telling a story about for the rest of your life. And that to me is a huge acceptance criteria. So that's kind of what I mean when folks ask me like, what right now would you say is your kind of biggest career goal? And I would say my biggest career goal is to take a leap forward for humankind. I'm not super interested in just making incremental solutions or even worse sort of workaround solutions or band-aid solutions to problems. I really want to think in a little bit more of a moonshotty sort of terms. How can we not just take a step forward, but actually take a leap forward? And that's what I'm really trying to hit at with the whole, not just another way to feel connected over distance, but can Tangible actually create presence over distance? Mm-hmm. That's the holy grail.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You mentioned that there is the aspect of like, you know, creating these products for just a select few people and not really seeing it scale. And then this current product, you really saw the potential for it to scale and to be brought to so many people and really define the culture of society, or basically. I'm sure that there were a lot of thoughts that kind of came up for you as you were, you know, deciding whether or not to take this leap of faith to start a company. And I'm curious, because you mentioned like so many compelling reasons and motivations that are so personal to you as to why you would want to start a company. I'm curious, what are some of the biggest worries or biggest challenges that you were maybe a little afraid to take on, and how you've kind of navigated that since starting Tangible?
I think when I was in my college years, I'm still very naive as it comes to wearing the hat of a business person versus a designer. And that's a fundamental difference, I think, between just inventing one-off products versus building a company. I remember graduating from Stanford, and I was still in this mindset of entrepreneurship is sort of this super fun, high reward, sort of low risk, very glorified path towards like creating impact and celebrating it in like kind of an unequivocally positive and heartwarming sort of way. I think maybe in my mind, I expected that, oh, look at me. I'm this, you know, young, happy, cute, like in the same sense of cuteness as like, you know, when a 12-year-old goes up on stage and like plays a nice little piece on their violin and all the parents want to clap. I think I still kind of lived in that mindset of post-college. It doesn't really matter what I'm working on as long as I sort of am pure-hearted. I work on it with a big smile on my face and I try and be a do-gooder for the world. Sort of the rich VCs and the folks in power in Silicon Valley and beyond will shower me with the necessary funding and support and mentorship to make it happen. And I think I was in for a bit of a reality check when I switched out of that designer to a business mindset, but it was not a fully negative transition. Really, it was a great experience of very rapid growth and reality checks. And now I feel that I've actually developed much better critical thinking tools that have helped me not just almost get overexcited like a puppy about everything. I've become much more intentional about sort of which bones I'm trying to actually dig up in the yard. And one, I guess, key instance of this growth was soon after college, one of my best friends, her dad, had lived in Palo Alto and worked in Silicon Valley for several decades. And he was nice enough to actually invite me over to his backyard to help me look over all my incorporation documents for Tangible. And I was such a happy-go-lucky kid at the time. You know, my law firm that I had been lucky through Stanford to get a free program that would give me free incorporation had given me all these pre-prepared templates. And I remember sitting down in his backyard and my friend's dad said, "Akshay, today I'm going to help you grow fangs." I was like, "Fangs? Why do I need fangs? Where is this coming from?" And he said, "You've been living in this myth that venture capitalists are your friends. They're not your friends. They will absolutely take prey on you as soon as they can. You need to realize that they're not your friends. They're your business partners. And so for today, I'm going to help you grow fangs." And he really walked through all of the small text and talked about all these interesting clauses and subtext and important modifications I need to make to these incorporation documents to literally protect myself in future fundraising rounds. And him and several other mentors who really stood up over the first year or two of working on my company helped me quickly develop a much better sort of financial and operations literacy that I was missing before.
Yeah, those are all things that like protect the longevity of what you're working on, which I can now, that's like such a great concrete example of something that you don't have to focus on when you're building a one-off project, but if you want to protect yourself for the long term and, you know, protect your relationships with people who, it's like a business relationship, these are all important factors to consider.
Absolutely. I grew up, you know, my parents were not businessmen. Both of them worked in sort of public sector. And because of that, I was raised in a mindset of charity. You know, for a lot of our family birthdays, we would ask for donations to certain causes as opposed to ask for presents. When I got older, you know, the goal was if I build something, sort of find a way to give it away for free or donate it. That's why I enjoyed working on so many prosthetics in college. And I think it was a really important realization for me that if you really want to create large scale impact, you have to also break even. It's not that business necessarily indicates or mandates that you have to sort of take advantage of other people. I think business is simply a mindset that allows you to scale the ability to like fulfill the needs and wants of a larger population than just one or two people before you declare bankruptcy. And so at first, I think I had a very naive and superficial view of capitalism. And that general way of thinking of profit-driven business. But once you really reframe profit into simply having more resources to do even more good, as opposed to maybe having more resources to redirect towards yourself, the field of business becomes much more nuanced and fascinating. And I hope that I'm continuing to grow and, you know, challenge some of my naive assumptions from before around the balance of being a business person versus a designer.
Yeah, I would love to dive into more of the details of building out the different parts of the business of Tangible. So I wanted to start by something that I read on your website that I was very inspired by. You've iterated through 50 prototypes of Tangible. So what was the first quote unquote prototype that you got feedback on? Was it like a 2D drawing? Was it a 3D model? Was it like a physical prototype that people could actually put on? What did it look like?
And to be clear, I would say that's 50 generations of prototypes, not just prototypes. So it's been a lot for sure. I think so. To answer your question, binders and binders of sketches and ideas and schematics and one-page documents were the very, very first prototype, if you will. But when things started to become physical, the ones that really stand out were a object that I called Terrain. It was a matrix of motors that also had a corresponding inverse matrix. So if you have ever been to the Exploratorium or any kind of science museum for kids, where they have that giant bed of nails where you take your hand and you can stick your hand on this giant sheet of nail heads, and wherever you obviously push your hand down, the nails sort of come out the other side. And it's a way of sort of representing the inverse of whatever you're doing through pressure. So I created a more electronic version of that system that if I were to put a handprint, there was like a virtual hand that would materialize on the other side. And that really got me interested in moving from 2D to 3D interfaces. Coming out of graduation, one of the biggest questions that was intellectually on my mind at the time was, what comes after the iPhone? How do we escape sort of these 2D glass screens that connect us? And I took that even farther with the second generation prototype of Tangible, which was actually a repurposed Patagonia jacket that I had sewn a lot of motors and wires into. It was not something that would ever make it through airport security, I promise. But what it did do that was really cool was it let you feel movies come to life through touch. And one of my favorite demos I built, it was, if you had ever gone to Disneyland or sat in one of those four-dimensional theaters where there's things that tickle your feet and water that sprays on you and the chair vibrates, it was that in the form of a jacket. And it really lets you feel these Star Wars spaceships fly around space. I had a demo that let you be chased by the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. You could ride a virtual roller coaster. And it was so, so fun, but it was not useful and it was not a business. And I was not convinced that, you know, people living in 120 degree summers in Arizona would want to buy this thing because it was a jacket. So that, at the very least, got me technically curious enough in this field of sort of immersive touch and different kinds of interfaces that can bring that to life in a way that's actually wearable or practical. And, you know, 2 years later and 50 generations of prototypes, we got to something that we felt ready to launch.
Wow. Okay. So you mentioned a lot of different types of people who would use Tangible, like people in a romantic relationship, military families, people where it's like my family member might be in the hospital and I'm at home. There are a lot of different types of users. So whose feedback do you value the most, and what is your process for getting their feedback?
Totally. Right now, Tangible is an experience that's optimized for long distance couples. And I interpret distance in a very open-minded way. I think there's two kinds of distance that couples can experience. There's physical distance, you know, actual long distance couples who are living in different countries or time zones, and there's logistical distance. Really, I think it comes down to, if you're a couple that doesn't sleep in the same bed or bedroom every single night, I think of that as a long distance relationship. And my goal, not just for my product, but for the set of products and experiences that my company is creating over the next few years, is to be the most magical way to feel present in your relationship, regardless of whether you're logistically or physically in long distance. And so those are the customers that we pay most attention to.
Okay. And how do you typically get feedback from them? Do you invite them into a lab? Do you send them prototypes and then ask them to like record a reaction?
We have done the whole alphabet. So we, in the thick of COVID, had no choice because of quarantine except to do a lot of remote beta testing. So we would build units. I became best friends with the folks at the Stanford post office. I was still living near there at the time. And I remember shipping stuff out many, many times per week. At the same time, we did a lot of remote interviews. As COVID, the situation got a little bit more under control over time, I started to mask up. I remember going and visiting folks for beta tests, and I was, you know, wearing a mask and glasses and disposable gloves and wearing, you know, basically like a somewhat fashionable hazmat, self-designed hazmat suit out in public and, you know, sanitizing these pillows every time we use them, changing out outer sleeves. Mm. And it was a grind to like build a physical product in the thick of COVID, especially when my founding team was remote as well. Mm. We had to really take some lessons from Apollo 13. You know, when Apollo 13 had its issue in space, they actually had a spare capsule that was a duplicate of the rocket out in space that was on Earth. And so because they were like, these scientists don't have access to fancy manufacturing machines and stuff to like fix whatever hole is going on, they actually had the ground control team spend like the next 96 hours living in this clone capsule on Earth and figuring out like what out of the tools and materials that are already in this capsule can the astronauts use to fix their situation. So I essentially took that to heart with my electrical engineer who was based in Chicago. And we just, you know, actually duplicated our working environments down to the electronics we had, the parts we'd order, two of everything. And that is because his technical knowledge in electronics was far deeper than mine. But I'm the person who had to assemble the units to actually get out to beta testers because the Bay Area was a much more strategic location. It was very much like Apollo 13, you know, mission control and ground control, duplicating our surroundings to figure things out.
Yeah, wow. Well, speaking of COVID, I'm assuming that there was probably some supply chain challenges that came with making a physical product. You know, I was thinking maybe it would have been helpful to have the HoloLens, Sophia, because you had the HoloLens working for frontline workers when they couldn't have maintenance folks like come in person, right? And
right,
so they could
right.
Circle things and point to things remotely, which is really cool. But I guess given this, like, can you talk a little bit about how COVID kind of introduced some challenges that came with maybe the manufacturing process or the physical product design process?
Totally. I'll share one. What was really crazy to me is I think a lot of us as, you know, privileged millennials who are maybe lucky to have a roof over our head that feels stable when we grow up, always can expect, you know, food on the table, was never a concern for me in my childhood. So I was very blessed to have that kind of stability. And I grew up in Kansas, in the middle of the Midwest, you know, a state where not a lot of ideas move in and out of the state very quickly. So it's actually a great bubble to have a real childhood. You can go outside and play on the street every day. And these topics like politics and religion and other things that I think are frequently talked about in the Bay Area and honestly are some of the main points of conversation, it's a very different culture in the Midwest. And so I was able, for better or for worse, to grow up in an environment where I wasn't constantly hearing about new federal policy changes every day. So it was a shock to me when working on Tangible, I had to order a bunch of motors for my product from China. And for the first time, I had to pay an additional tax because of some of the embargoes and tariffs that the Trump administration had actually implemented on China. And I was like, oh my gosh, for the first time, I'm like actually being affected by some of the laws in this country.
Yeah.
And that was a big shock to me. And that was obviously accentuated during the COVID time, as well as some of the foreign relations that were going on at the time. So that's one instance that comes to mind. But besides that, you know, we had to face a lot of the same challenges as other hardware startups, but start early, build things in the United States when you can, as opposed to going overseas, and, you know, be very strategic with how you spend money. Don't buy more than you need of anything until you have full conviction that it's sort of the right part for you. Yeah.
Yeah. On top of iterating on the prototype, I'm sure you also were iterating on the story and how you presented the business value and the story of Tangible. I would love to hear about these interactions, your interactions with investors. When you were telling them about your story and about Tangible, what were aspects of the idea that clicked right away for them? And what were some of the common reactions or hesitations or questions that investors often had?
For sure. Everyone gets the problem. Because we've all been in a long distance relationship at some point in our life, whether it was with a partner, a parent, girlfriend, pet, you name it. Mm-hmm. But the solution is not obvious. When I ask you, like, give me an idea for how we can improve physical presence over distance. There are probably 100 different ideas that could potentially work out. There's not a clear right answer that comes to mind. There are some very science fiction-y sort of stuff. And we actually went through the exercise as a team of trying to really dig deep into people's minds and get them to like almost vomit out to us, like, what actually is what we like to call this, like, the holy grail of physical presence over distance. And as a team, we went through an entire literal exercise of creating a spectrum of like the vibrating teddy bear all the way to the end all be all holy grail solution. And we found out that the holy grail solution that most people converge to, if they just like are forced to like think about this in for long enough, we all ultimately end up saying something like, we imagine the future of FaceTime will be these sort of immersive upper body high resolution holograms that have like immersive touch in midair. So if I like hug someone in midair, they'll like feel it. And I think we all kind of agree on that if you were to spend 10 hours and just think about this. But that's obviously not something we can build right now. And it's also so out there. It would be so expensive. It would be so exotic that even if I were able to raise a ton of funding and build that right now, people wouldn't adopt it. It would be weird. It would take a lot of onboarding and it would have a lot of friction. So the question became, okay, we can't build the ultimate right side of the spectrum. We got to like kind of peel back a few layers and start thinking about, like, we can't build the end all be all. What is actually maybe the first meaningful chess move or first meaningful leap or step towards that end vision? And that's how we eventually sort of frame the pillow. But, you know, it takes a little bit of convincing. Not everyone is immediately on board with the pillow. You sort of, it is kind of unintuitive as to how like a magical pillow can actually create a sense of physical presence over distance. And it, to some people, they have to actually experience it. So we do a lot of immersive demos for investors. And, you know, investors too have different stakes. There are many different kinds of flavors and types of investors. And there are some for us that make a lot more sense than others. We're very much a Shark Tank type company. We're the type of product that is meant to be like a fun lifestyle product that you buy off of Instagram or TikTok. We're not the kind of company that will ever become like a Google or an Apple. So, you know, we're not trying to go for those kinds of investors. We'll go for the investors who are former founders of like fashion and apparel brands, who are inventors of different kinds of fun wearables and fitness products. Those are the people who really get what we're doing. And we've been lucky to find some amazing Stanford professors who have also taken us under our their wing because they do research in very relevant fields of telepresence or immersive touch for connection over distance. There are a couple labs that we've had great resonance with.
Yeah, I see that you work with Jeremy Baylinson, who is an incredible professor who was first hired to in the VR department at Stanford. And so I remember he was telling us the story of how when he was talking about avatars, and that was such a weird thing back in like the early 2000s, and university would hire him. And it was only Stanford that would hire him. And so it's so cool to see how far, you know, his long-term vision has come to fruition in many ways, because now AR, VR is so widely available to consumers and users. And I think it's just so interesting. It's so cool to hear that you've been able to partner with these people who have experienced similar friction, whether it's like technical friction of like, how do we technically get this done, but also cultural friction of how do we work on something that can be accepted and can be something that people are not immediately scared of, but something that people feel really excited and curious about. And I'm sure with that discernment of the kinds of people you want to work with, that also probably came with building your team. So you have two co-founders who are the head of software and head of hardware, and you also have over a dozen part-time team members and advisors. So we kind of touched a little bit on the advisors, so I'm really curious about the people who are on the ground with you. How did you approach building your team and deciding what skill sets, experiences, and perspectives you really wanted to kind of be the foundation for Tangible?
It was a hilarious sort of need-based hiring process at the start. I was a complete chicken with my head cut off. It took me about a year to like realize that I needed to switch from the designer hat to the business hat. And for the first year, I was just really messing around with a bunch of electronics, building things that were cool but weren't useful, like that smart jacket, things that were fun but were not actual viable businesses. And at the same time, I was learning and growing very quickly, but it took some time. And I finally got to a point where, you know, in design, you should always start with a problem, not a solution. And I finally sort of got that. I like picked a problem. The problem was obviously like physical presence over distance is painful for long distance couples. How do we solve that? And once I finally anchored my journey in a problem, then I sort of stopped becoming attached to these cool gadgets I was building. Mm. And then zoomed out, was like, what are the actual interesting pieces of technology here that could be promising for this problem? And I got to a point where I was like, oh my gosh, I need to design my first printed circuit board. I've never done this before. So first I actually tried to do it myself. And I designed a printed circuit board that was by definition a printed circuit board, but it certainly didn't do much. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to hire someone who's actually good at this. So that's when I brought on Paul. I was essentially looking for a brilliant electrical engineer who knew how to design printed circuit boards, and was lucky enough to kind of catch him when he was in between opportunities and convinced him to join my company. And then was lucky enough to realize that he could be so much more than just a person who designs printed circuit boards for my team. He very much has grown into a full founder since then and taken on a ton of different kinds of responsibilities. And then Katie is a genius on the software side of things. Her full title, we don't put it on the website because it's too long, is actually Head of Mixed Reality and Inclusive Design. And Whoa. We love that last part of it.
Oh, Katie.
Because she has a knack for thinking of every single accessibility concern that no other early stage founder would. She's the voice that makes us use the font Montserrat in our app because it's through research is known to be one of the most readable fonts. Mm-hmm. She is the person who influences us to try to use minimal text in the app and use really intuitive design, use black on white text rather than white on black text, and different ways of, you know, really avoiding, even though we have an app that has a lot of different kinds of beautiful animations and visuals, she's encouraged us to avoid different kinds of blinking or flashing lights in case it might, you know, even induce some kind of, you know, strobe effect. And so really bring on perspectives like that to really shape the design have been life-changing for us. So I'm really grateful to have both of them on this journey at the core. And we've had several cycles of amazing interns. And at this point, as you said, a large team of advisors who are helping us out as well.
What an amazing combination of skill sets to all bring together. And I'm so impressed that inclusive design is something your team is committed to from the very beginning. I imagine for a lot of teams, they can be like, we want to be scrappy, want to be fast. Like, I don't know, just pick a freaking font and get it out there. Why do we need to have the font right from the beginning? And I love that this has been like a focus for one of the co-founders on your team. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah. There's two ways I think that's quickly manifested itself. One is what actually sold me on Paul is I remember my first interview with him. He told me he considers himself a designer before an engineer. An engineer starts at step one, which is what's the best way to solve this problem? And a designer starts at step zero, which is this even the right question to ask? Is this the right problem to solve? And so I immediately knew that for him, in comparison to a lot of other hardware engineers, the design process is emotional first rather than just purely technical or intellectual. And I already knew that through him, we would have a really great sort of human-centered design process in the company.
I'm sure there are times when people have different ideas about what's going to work best, and they're passionate and all invested, so they're probably going to speak up when they have different ideas. So what were aspects of the product that went through the most discussion and iteration?
It's really hard to find the balance between trying to create interactions that feel rooted in reality in a very literal way, like how do you send a hug over distance? But obviously, no kind of hug, even if we were to spend $1 million and build like a humanoid robot, like a Baymax, that could give you realistic hugs, no one would buy that. And it would be a really weird experience. There is something somehow more powerful about, like, honestly, receiving like a buzz or a ding notification ding on your phone, which is a thoughtful text message from your loved one, actually holds more weight. So there's a weird uncanny valley of what actually creates the hormonal responses that we want over distance, of oxytocin, the love hormone, and dopamine and endorphins. And it's not necessarily linearly correlated to like real life interactions. And so at Tangible, we also think a lot about how can we not sort of fall into this trap of trying to replicate reality and failing endlessly, because reality is beautiful. And the point of technology is to actually automate the parts of reality that we don't like doing so that we can spend more time enjoying reality. And the last thing I want to do is have, you know, loved ones where they're actually in person, just like with their faces glued to like a virtual reality headset or something, to feel more present together. Yeah. So instead of doing that, we're trying to think about how can we instead add a magical layer to reality, very much similar to like an augmented reality thesis, but in a much more multi-sensory and, you know, adapted to existing old devices sort of way. And so we have to think about, with the constraints of a pillow and an iPhone 8, how do you share a warm blanket across the world? How do you play dodgeball with your brother? How do you turn on the fireplace in our app and like feel warmth and actually feel cozy over distance? And so it's not just about like the sensation you feel. We have to have sound effects. We have to have certain animations that show up in the app. And right now we're actually in the middle of a design challenge of figuring out what is the right animation to show on the phone screen when you squeeze the pillow to send a hug to your loved one. What should that actually look like? And we've actually burned through like 5 or 6 ideas and we're still not fully content. So it's these kinds of like multi-sensory visual design metaphor challenges for ways of showing physical touch and affection that don't really exist in a digital virtual world that we have to figure out. And that takes a lot of work.
Yeah, it's like 4D design almost, not even just 3D and like animations. It's like you want it. I don't even know what 4D design means, but that's just the first term that came to my mind.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I love how you got to spend a lot of time on this challenge and get to hear a lot of different perspectives from your teammates, from the people that are working for you, because it's reminding me a lot of how animation kind of runs into a similar problem, because with Disney and Pixar, they have always been trying to create as realistic of an animation as possible. That's why we're always so fascinated when we see like the water look like real water, and we're always really fascinated. Yeah, or like the little fibers on your clothing. But there's a reason why animated characters don't yet look like actual people. Like there's that uncanny valley, like you were talking about, that actually would really turn people off. And that's why it was so interesting when Spider-Verse came out. I don't know if you've seen it, Akshay, but it was such a different style of animation that was not trying to be realistic at all, but actually was trying to really be stylistic and creative in the way that they take advantage of the tools. And so it's so cool to hear how you are kind of incorporating creativity into these sound effects and animations into tangible, so that it doesn't just have to feel like a hug, but it can feel like a hug with a little bit of embellishments on top of it. Because it's like music, like you love doing like different types of vibrato, different types of bow strokes, and it's just that creates the style and the voice that you get to share with people, and that is their unique touch to it too.
For sure. At the end of the day, I think tangible is not about finding the perfect animation or sort of a one shoe size fits all of like one hug that you can send and it just looks perfect on the screen. Really, our team exists much more in the mindset of we're designing a series of musical instruments of touch over distance. And so every single feature we create, even the hugs, we try and incorporate what we call intentional variance. There needs to be at least one variable, at least one way the user, by either how hard they squeeze or where they touch the screen or how long they squeeze, that they can actually directly influence what's happening, maybe changing the color of the visual that's on the screen to convey nuanced emotions and messages. And I think that's really important for that actually lets you make the product appealing to a much wider audience rather than just having one thing that looks beautifully that's played over and over again.
Definitely. I feel like the hugs that I give my family is very different from the hug that I give my partner or even an acquaintance. And there can be so many different instances where I want to give a hug to people, even if they're far away from me or logistically far away from me. And so I love that there is so much flexibility that people can play around with to kind of create their own voice and their own style in a way to tangible. I'm getting excited just talking about this, and I would love to experiment with the different types of hugs with tangible. Since you've had so many testers, so many people who've been a part of your journey, I'm curious, what are some highlights that have along the way kept you going, especially when things get hard? Because you've talked about a couple of challenges that came with creating the company, getting tangible to its current state. You also did a Kickstarter and everything. And so I would love to hear some things that you want to celebrate that we can celebrate alongside you.
I appreciate that. There have been many eras of building the business where we have been just slogging through mud for months. Mm-hmm. But there are other points in time where you get glimpses of product market fit. And product market fit is fun. It's so fun because they say that product market fit is when you're doing everything wrong and the business is still growing. And we've had a few elements of that. One time it happened really when our TikTok went viral. And mm-hmm. in the next 72 hours, we received over 1,500 personalized messages. Aww. That was in addition to 11,000 email signups that we had gotten. And these are paragraphs and paragraphs of military families and parents and children who are separated across the globe. There were couples, one of which had a husband who was like a stroke patient who was in a hospital across the country and they couldn't be there. It was autistic couples. It was really amazing to see the range of folks who are really resonating with what we were building. And we have actually amalgamated, we're just overwhelmed. There's no way to even capture all 1,500 in like a slide deck. So we randomly chose like 100 of them, took screenshots, and we have a little sort of feel good folder that we can look at whenever we want. Similarly, we have a 3 to 4 minute highlight reel of our favorite magic moments from beta testing of people sending and experiencing hugs for the first time. I also love it when customers are impatient. Nothing is better than when someone sends you 2 or 3 emails like, have you shipped yet? Have you shipped yet? Did you get my order? Has this come? That's a great sign, even though it makes you feel bad and makes you need to work a little bit harder to get it out the door. And then the last one I'll share is, there are huge pedagogues in the field like Jeremy Bailenson, as we talked about, who are just, fathers of modern thought and research around immersive telepresence in these kinds of mixed reality contexts. And I remember we brought our pillows over to him and he experienced Doodle, that feature I talked about where you take your finger and you draw around the screen and you kind of feel the traveling massage move around. And Paul and I were there together. And I remember us thinking like, we've used Doodle so many times ourselves and as the builders of the actual feature, it's just like not that magical to us. Our brains are always in the future. We're like, what's the next cool thing we're going to make? But Jeremy Bellinson was like obsessed with it. I actually had a recent second advisor meeting with it. And he, in the middle of our meeting, had his wife come, as well as his lab manager and another professor, all come just to try Doodle out one by one by one. And to see, the true kind of nerds in the field that we're working in be so obsessed and honestly impressed with what our founding team considers to be one of like our earliest, like the equivalent of our Facebook like of like what we're building, is very, very empowering and great to reflect on. That feels like a huge win to achieve something that they say at Apple. I think this is a Joni Ive quote, that an object starts to feel magical when you can no longer really explain how it does what it does, but it does so in sort of a really positive way. And I think we've tapped into that with Doodle and a couple other of our features. And it's clear that, even with our TikTok that went viral, which was really my wonderful high school intern just wearing a pillow and talking into a camera with no editing for 45 seconds about the 3 main features of the product, that's all great validation to us that something we're doing, we may not have 100% figured it out yet, but this is a journey of learning and there's something deep down that's like resonating with a lot of these folks that we find very exciting. And every designer needs to fall in love with the problem, not the solution. The end solution's always silly. I didn't start out this journey thinking I'd be building different kinds of pillows with sensors for couples and claiming that I'm solving physical presence over distance. But I'm obsessed with the idea of what this could be. And I'm obsessed with spending as much time as possible with my users, because anytime you're confused or the design process gets loopy, you just got to hang out with your customers a little bit longer and they will give you everything you need to like find the right answer. It just takes time.
Yeah. I'm like laughing because I'm trying to imagine current Akshay telling freshman Akshay, hey, in a couple of years, you're going to make magical neck pillows. Like, I wonder what he would have said versus hearing this is the problem that you're solving. And I'm sure he would have been amazed and just in awe of all the work that you're doing. And so I'm celebrating here with you. And I also think that we, Sophia and I, can really relate to the feeling of being so deep in the waters with the things that you're creating that you don't even feel the magic anymore. And so I'm glad that you had so much affirmation to get to see that the magic is existing, even if you might not feel it in the moment, in the mud of everything. Other people are getting to experience that too.
For sure. there are highs and lows to every journey, but you just got to kind of zoom out and see it as just fun waves hitting the shore. Sometimes some splashes are bigger than others.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk recently on TikTok about whether the founder should be the face of the brand. You know, how much should the brand story be about the founder story? How much should the founder be showing their face and talking into the camera? Now that you've been on TikTok for a little bit, you've shared some videos, your intern has shared some videos. What's it been like to represent Tangible on social media?
Yes, it's an exciting thing when a company gets far enough along to where the team starts to focus a lot of effort on marketing as opposed to product. That means that typically you have a good sense that what you've built is kind of ready for customers and it's time to scale. And so we've started to get into that mindset with our team. And because of that, have had to, you know, grow into a lot of new hats and also be very critical about the pros and cons of different platforms and what it means to be sort of a founder as influencer, which is something I think is mandatory for most consumer product founders these days. And so I have no choice. You know, the days are over. The Facebook ads platform is dead for the most part. And it used to be the case. And even most of my advisors, unfortunately, come from that era where they, you know, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in venture money pumping Facebook ads for their products to sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of units. And I can't really do that anymore. Nowadays, it's all about virality and what can catch the attention on the For You page of TikTok. And there used to be a day and age where as a founder, you could just spend $10,000 to $20,000, hire some beautiful looking models, a professional photographer or videographer, and spend one day of the year capturing a bunch of beautiful photos of your product in a photo studio, and then just edit that all and just recycle it over the course of the entire year and just achieve a ton of sales that way. That's not how it is anymore. The world wants to see me first thing out of bed, haven't even brushed my teeth, eaten breakfast yet, just like selfie camera lying in bed with like string lights in the background, talking about how I'm feeling for the day, day in the life. It all comes down to what's the catchiness in the background. So, and you know, and if you can't even fake it because the world has gotten so good at sniffing out what's inauthentic. Mm. And on a broad level, I suppose that's a good thing. I think authenticity and craving uniqueness is a wonderful thing. And it really, I think I need to be the change, not the people, obviously. It comes down to me just becoming more familiar and confident in my own body, feeling okay, you know, showing the ugliness of a certain room in my house or how I'm not on top of something one day, or, you know, even celebrating if I'm like taking a mental health day off of work because I need to like recharge. And I think the world for the first time is much more receptive and encouraging of founders who are willing to kind of cut back them in that many layers of the onion of themselves rather than, you know, continue sharing like photoshopped beautiful images that are kind of a false portrayal of reality. I think that's fun. And my life's a little bit harder now because I now have to adjust and create content almost on a daily or like multi day per week sort of basis, as opposed to that one time per year fancy photo shoot. But at the end of the day, it's all about designing an organization, adapting to the trends, and design at the end of the day is just about running a series of thoughtful experiments. And as long as you're able to frame every single social media platform as sort of a semi-random slot machine where some things happen for a reason and some things don't, but it's all about effort, consistency, talking to people who have previously beaten the slot machine and figuring out what you can sort of steal, pilfer, and adapt from the masters. And then also, most importantly, the true gift of being a startup founder is that there are no questions that are off the table. In almost any other role in your life, you are forced to be an engineer rather than a designer, where you're not allowed to ask, why are we actually building this product? Or like, why don't we completely switch gears and start working on solar panels? But in my job, no questions off limits. I can be whoever I want to be. And that is truly the most empowering feeling as a founder, that I get to really think for myself. And that's both paralyzing at times, but that's also a huge superpower and really the skill that I think is most meaningful for my entire lifetime.
Yeah. I did a Kickstarter for a short film pretty recently, Akshay, and the director is not savvy with TikTok at all. And so I saw, you know, challenges and the struggle. Yeah, I had to train him. And I'm not even like a big TikTok user. And so I applaud you for really rising to the occasion, because it's very vulnerable to put yourself on TikTok, to be showing that authentic self. And even for him, like the ones that talked about vulnerability and his emotional moments with his dad, because the film was about a father and son, those were ended up being so well received. And it's quite incredible to see how validating it is that even your most innermost desires and like shaky moments can be the things that really resonate with people. And so I'm glad that you have been able to showcase that to people. And I think, I'm sure that makes people even more excited to support Tangible and your journey as a business person or a designer too.
Absolutely.
So congrats on a very successful Kickstarter. So in less than a week, you ended up raising over $15,000, which is amazing. I'm sure people have been listening to this episode and either want Tangible, they want to hear more of your story or get to know the Tangible, the company more. How else can folks support Tangible and hear more about Tangible?
First stop, go to our website, poke around. Message me if you have questions, but our website is tangible.team, and you can reach me at akshay@tangible.team. And if you're curious to go further than that and either claim your spot in our next batch of pillows that drop or join our sort of internal beta testing community or focus groups, just submit any of the forms on our homepage, your email address, and you'll hear from us very shortly after that.
Yay. And if we want to check out these videos of your journey,
your day in the life.
Yes. What is the best way to find Tangible on social?
Yes. If you really want to know what kind of cereal I eat in the morning and stuff like that, definitely check out our TikTok and Instagram are the social media channels we are most active on. Just simply search Tangible Teleportation and we should pop up. It's a huge honor to be on this podcast. Thank you both so much for having me.
Of course. We've been looking forward to this for so long too. Thank you for teaching us so much about what it takes to be a founder, your learnings along the way. It's really exciting to see like category creation happening, where you're not just another like teddy bear that glows up, but you're just like the next level of presence. And so it is an honor to get to chat with you about your story. So for our listeners, if you enjoy this conversation and you want to amplify this story, think of a friend who might enjoy this conversation and let them know that we are on every podcast platform. If you enjoyed this conversation and want to play a role in amplifying over 200 episodes of Asian American perspectives and stories, please go ahead and share a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so others can find these stories as well. We'll link a bunch of related episodes below, but we have other stories of founders building products, also other reflections and conversations about tools for staying connected that we've like other tools that we've explored. And if you'd like to hear more from Bamboo and Glass, you can reach out to us on Instagram or TikTok or invite us to your school or organization. We've done a lot of topics. We've done a lot of talks on a wide range of topics based on your interests, and we would be so excited to hear from you via email at bambooandglass@gmail.com. And with that, thank you for tuning in, and we will chat with you next Sunday.
Bye.